Welcome to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo. Coming up on today's program, we'll wrap up our year-long series, The Elsie Diaries, as we sit down with Oxford, Maryland residents Richard and Jessica Johnson and chat with them about their year-long sailing expedition that took them halfway around the world. We'll talk with acclaimed songstress Jane Monheit about her new record, Motherhood, and being a woman in today's music industry. But we begin today at the Easton Academy Art Museum, where through this Sunday, you can see an exhibition about the Y House, a former Talbot County plantation that was once home to many slaves, including Frederick Douglass. Archaeologists from the University of Maryland spent 8 years excavating at the Y House, and what they've found has shed new light on not only the role of slaves here on the Eastern Shore, but also some of the untold stories of how they lived. It was at the museum that I met these fine folks.
Hello, my name's Amanda Tang, and I'm a doctoral candidate at the University of Maryland College Park.
My name is Benjamin Skolnick. I'm a PhD graduate student at the University of Maryland College Park.
I'm Anka van Wagenberg, and I'm the curator at the Academy Art Museum.
I'm Mark Leone. I teach at the University of Maryland College Park, and I direct the archaeology at Y House Inn in Easton.
It's a wonderfully layered exhibit. Professor Leone started by explaining why folks who have visited the gallery have been so moved by both the exhibit's cultural significance as well as its historical importance.
The Lloyd family has committed its resources, its house, all of its records, its personal well-being, to reaching out to the descendant community, African Americans here and all over the United States, to share those resources so that the ground, the books, they themselves can be evidence for the fact that two cultures were created at Y House, not just those connected to Europe, but those connected to Africa, and that survived on that plantation as it did at many others.
As we walk through the beginning of it here, I found it very interesting that the description of this exhibit went something to the effect of, the exhibit concentrates not on the evils of slavery, but rather on the culture made by Africans and African Americans on the property, including the combined work of the Lloyds and their enslaved Africans. The Lloyd family at one time was one of, they had some of the largest number of slaves in the entire country. The other main thing that links the Lloyd family with sort of what we know is that time period of slavery in America is the fact that Frederick Douglass spent some time at the Y House. Talk to me a little bit about not only Frederick Douglass, but the culture that lived and existed within that time at the Y House.
Sometimes we have a little bit of trouble in that most of the records, especially from a historical point of view, were written by the white landowning class who could read, could write, had access to things that they could tell their own stories, basically. And now, 150 years later, the story on slavery and plantations has largely been skewed sort of in that direction. And as archaeologists, all we're left with are sort of the broken little pieces of artifacts in the ground that we can dig up. But having Frederick Douglass not only live here, but also write about it in each of his autobiographies, there's sort of a synergy that sort of leverages the artifacts with what Douglass tells us about what he saw while he was there.
Let's walk over to this bit of it here, because this was one of the things when I first walked through really struck me. It was the fact that, I guess historically speaking, when there was a record of slaves throughout history, most of the time slaves were only documented by first names. But here, the Lloyd family did something a little different. They documented their enslaved people by first and last names. Talk a little bit about how notable that is.
I think it's very exciting to have this particular material in the exhibition. There are 8 lists of slaves, or the enslaved, I should say, and they are on loan from the Maryland Historical Society. They are significant material because the last names are also listed, as opposed to other lists, even federal lists that were made in census, etc., where the enslaved were always listed by their first first name. These are Lloyd documents from the Lloyd family, and the enslaved are listed with their first name, last name, their age, sometimes even their profession. So they're meticulously kept documents.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Even the 1860 U.S. Census listed only an age and a sex. We don't even have a first name on the 1860 census.
Yeah.
Brian, I think what we want people to take away from these lists is that enslaved Africans everywhere probably had surnames, but here they're written down. Therefore, there are families, generations, and now what happens is that the genealogies that people always knew were there have a clearer sense of being recorded. And so what we want to do is take these books and put them in the hands of the people who can use them best.
Certainly when you read the accounts of Frederick Douglass about his time at White House, it certainly painted a picture of, you know, life being very hard for an enslaved person. What did we learn not only about race, but also what it was like for people living at White House during this time?
Well, a lot of Frederick Douglass and what he tells us in all his autobiographies is essentially about the oppression, the racism, the difficulties and the horrors about slavery, and some of the things that we're able to bring to this picture, while we certainly agree and we follow and we do find these sorts of things, what we're also bringing to the table is that the enslaved had regular daily lives, they ate food, they were spiritual, and they had a lot more of a life that they built here at this plantation that isn't always apparent in a lot of these autobiographies.
Do you think that this exhibit or what you found during this archaeological dig starts to scratch the surface of explaining and telling that story past the point of just the oppression that we, of course, link, and rightfully so, slavery with?
I mean, I think you're right. I think we've tried to put to rest the question of slavery after the end of the Civil War. I mean, it's a terrible thing that is a reality when it comes to American history. And one of the things that when we work with Douglass that we keep in mind is that when he was at White House, he was a boy. And many of the things that he writes about 20 or 30 years later, reflecting back on his childhood. Mm-hmm. So when we read Douglass, you're reading, you know, a grown man writing about his childhood mm-hmm. as a slave. And I think that the fact that he was a child at the time certainly affects the way he writes about it and the things that he remembers writing. So when we read Douglass, we see he's talking about playing around or just the things that he eats, sort of these little everyday things that, if you or I were writing about what our daily lives are like, we may leave out because we don't think it's something important. Mm-hmm. But as a child, that's sort of Frederick Douglass's world, is those little things that children latch onto, and it means a big deal to them.
Yeah. Obviously, this all started with a dig, and for the past 8 years, you guys have been doing the hard work, getting down into the soil and finding things. Professor Leone, tell me about some of the things that you've been finding.
That's a happy question. The tiniest are the pollen grains. All plants leave pollen, and so we recapture them. We take pollen samples and count the kinds of species, genera, and families. We find bones, so that Amanda Tang analyzes the food remains. We find the foundations of buildings, and then we find the African-American materials that are connected to African traditions. But above all, what we find is the context that allows us to take the spotlight that we shine on Frederick Douglass as a consequence of the fact that he shined the spotlight on himself for the noble end of getting rid of slavery on everybody else. So archaeology through the ground provides the context for the community that made Douglass. He didn't make himself. There are tens of thousands of enslaved and free African Americans of the early 19th century and the late 18th century that produced Harriet Tubman in this area and Frederick Douglass too. And he admits that all of this African and African-American tradition is what allowed him to become what he became, and what he became was the freedom for everybody else.
As we walk over to sort of the personification of what you were just describing, as far as, you know, the cookbooks and the recipes and some of those artifacts, over the course of the 8 years, was there something that you came across that really is the proverbial diamond in the rough, the thing that you were just the most astonished that you found?
When we look at Y House as a plantation, one of the first things we have to understand is that Y House was growing and raising all of their own food. From a lot of the records, we don't see a lot of them bringing in food. They do a lot of selling and exporting of their food, but they are a producing plantation, and this is why they needed such a huge slave population. So we see all the evidence of that in the things that they were growing, such as through the pollen, and in the food, which is through the bones. So we can see a lot of the foods that they were consuming here on this plantation. Some of the things that we see in the greenhouse, in addition to that, is not just food that people are eating, but those exotics, those really interesting plants that people were just growing to essentially show that they could grow them, that they could grow here in the Maryland weather. They could grow citrus. They can grow these tropical type plants. And then we also see lots of medicinal plants grown that also don't really appear in the natural environment at all.
Professor Leone, when you look around at this and you start to hear the reaction from people in the community that have come and seen your work up close and personal, what do you hope that is the takeaway for people when they come in here, not only from a historical perspective, but also a cultural one?
What we have demonstrated is there's plenty to write about. African Americans have a rich tradition in the ground, if not in European and European American writings. It's all here. We can dig it up together, but it is up to them to write about it, to contextualize it, and to teach it to everybody else.
That was Professor Mark Leone from the University of Maryland talking with me about the Joint Heritage at Y House exhibit that runs through this Sunday. So if you haven't seen it yet, click to our website, wamucoast.org, for more information. We also heard from archaeology grad students Amanda Tang and Benjamin Solnick, as well as museum curator Anko von Wagenberg. I'm Brian Russo, and you're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City and 88.5 in Washington. We'll be right back.